It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob, here with you on Community Radio Station 3CR, and this is a Friday Rave. Well, it's Friday the 6th of September when you're listening to this, but I'm recording this late at night on Wednesday, when is it, the 5th? Thursday the 5th, I think it is by now, but that's really beside the point. As far as you should be concerned, it's Friday and it's 5 o'clock, and that means that you're listening, if indeed you are listening, to a Friday Rave on Community Radio, Radical Radio 3CR, with me, Jacob. Now, I don't know whether you're listening to us, Sam, via the old school Melbourne AM radio at 855 kilohertz or your favourite podcast client online through 3cr.org.au, or what's the other way, through 3CR Digital. However you're listening, it's still coming to you from the home of Radical Radio, 3CR, with the great support of a veritable army of volunteers, some staff, and of course you, the listener, that no doubt subscribes to the station and have paid up your Radiothon pledges this year. And if you haven't, or if you didn't even make a pledge but you want to, here's what you need to do. You need to get over to 3cr.org.au and make the contribution. Or better still, come in at Studio 21 Smith Street and splash the cash in person. Who knows? You might never leave. That sounded a bit threatening, didn't it? I wasn't meaning to. I was just saying the station could always do with an extra pair of hands, not to be ableist about it. To be frank, the kind of people who listen to a Friday Rave are exactly the kind of people we need here at Radical Radio HQ. Anyway, pop in and you might be pleasantly surprised at the way you can fit into the station, the way you can help out and help make 3CR even better than it already is. Now, I've been on about the arms industry a bit lately, and that's for three reasons. Firstly, because I always do. It's the one I keep gnawing away at. Secondly, because of Australia's role in supplying the weapons of destruction being used in Gaza and the West Bank. And finally, because Land Forces is coming up in Melbourne. So try to get down there to Jeff's Shed for the opening day rally on Wednesday the 11th. Now, next week I'll be speaking with Clinton Fernandez again, and it'll be a pre-record like this one. And while I know that the 25th anniversary of Timor-Leste's independence will come up, I've no idea where else the rave will go. Neither does Clinton, I dare say. You know, it's not as if there's not a lot going on in the world right now. But today, a couple of people have asked me what's going on in the Sahel. Regular listeners will recall that I spent a bit of time on the coups in Mali and Gabon and Burkina Faso, not to mention Niger. And I was asked at the Palestine rally last weekend whether my silence on those places have meant that things have sorted themselves out. Well, obviously not, though things have settled from the continuous coups of the last few years. But the expulsion of France and the US from many places has created a bit of a power vacuum that seems to me to be in danger of being filled very dramatically very soon. Russia's Wagner Group were a huge part of the West scare tactics in Sahel, and they still are, and they're still there. But they have a pretty fractious relationship with Moscow right now. And anyway, Moscow is very busy dealing with the increasing NATO push across its borders from Ukraine, which, as I said from the outset of the Ukraine war, was the whole reason behind it, didn't I? To keep Russia busy and stop it getting involved in places like West Africa and the Sahel. The Ukraine war. Now, with a combined death toll of over a couple of 100,000, probably getting closer to 500,000, all the things that the West said at the outset that they would never support, they are now supporting. Remember when the US, NATO, and places like Australia claimed that they would only support Ukraine's self-defence and not countenance a Ukraine counter-offensive into Russia? Of course you do. Well, it seems to have fallen by the wayside. And now we're at a point where Zelensky is asking for more bushmasters from Australia to replace the ones destroyed during just such a counter-offensive. But it may not surprise you that no mainstream media has picked up on that change of policy, have they? Just like the recent wars we've followed the US into just this century. The limitations have been removed, the objectives have changed, the arms have kept flowing, the profits have continued to amass for the shareholder class, and the people continue to die. Now, I said just after a few weeks that the objective of the Ukraine war was not to get Russia out of there, but to repeat the game plan of the 80s, to put such an economic and political burden on Russia and Afghanistan at that time that it will lead to the collapse of the Soviet Union. Well, mission accomplished. And didn't Afghanistan turn out great? The Soviet Union is dead and buried and has been replaced not by an ideological enemy in Russia, but by a capitalist competitor. A war continues that no side has ever stated how it would see an end game. I mean, they've said Russia out of Ukraine, and, you know, Ukraine said we want to ensure the protection of our citizens in the eastern Ukraine, but there's been no realistic scenario for what an end game might look like. Ongoing war is what they're after, not over territory nor even ideology, but for the sake of economic gain, where every person slaughtered, every child made homeless, every child that lost a parent, every parent heartbroken, serves two purposes in the interests of capitalism: an intensification of hate and despair, and using that so that the war continues to turn a profit for the masters of war. These same masters of war who will be at Land Forces next week. And what do I reckon will happen? Well, either Russia will be brought to its knees and retreat, or Ukraine will become a Western protectorate, in effect. Or the West will decide that, in the interest of a peaceful world, of course, they'll negotiate a settlement where the primarily Russian-speaking parts of Ukraine would be ceded to Russia, or granted some sort of quasi-autonomous independence. Latter, of course, could only happen because the West decides Ukraine is no longer important, its focus shifts elsewhere. I mean, there have been so many places that have been important that we've needed to invade and destroy and kill and murder and rape people just this century. And none of them have turned out well. And after they leave the Ukraine in ruins, they'll forget about all the poor people it sought to save from the nasty evil Vlad the Putinesca and leave them to rot. Now, that's far-fetched. Remember Libya. How we had to, it was incumbent on us to save the poor Africans from evil Gaddafi. Until just such a time as they ravaged the country, publicly raped and murdered its leader, and reassigned the ownership of the oil — don't forget about reassigning the ownership of the oil — they promptly forgot about the poor North Africans and left them to start up an open-air slave market. Well, they didn't forget about them. They're just keeping them there, keeping them close, in order to keep the oil flowing. But yeah, and the slave markets. And, you know, the whole thing about getting rid of Gaddafi too, you've got to say, the collapse of Libya is what supercharged an attack on all sub-Saharan Africans living in Libya, which in turn kicked off Islamic terrorism in the Sahel and in Sudan, which I'll get to. But that's not what I'm talking about today. There is a vacuum in leadership right across the Sahel, and this is due to the destabilisation and interference by the US and NATO, and to a lesser extent Russia. China, of course, also involved. But they seem to be actually funding projects rather than just destabilising. Sure, I'm sure the terms aren't that great, but to reuse Woody Guthrie's old line, China at worst seems to be robbing them with a fountain pen. Both the US, along with NATO and China, have been very active in trying to sort out a plan for Africa. They've been coming back and forward, holding meetings with various people for the last year or so. To me, It almost feels like the old Berlin Conference and the Berlin carve-up of Africa in the 1880s. Now, just recently, the US's African Command, AFRICOM, which is based in Europe, because no one in Africa wants to host its headquarters. Can you believe that? The US Pentagon, the US military's African Command, AFRICOM, can't find a tenancy in Africa. Oh dear, they just completed the meeting of African defence chiefs in Botswana in June. And of course NATO were there too. But it was interesting to see who turned up. I mean, actual African defence chiefs, the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, Ghana, Senegal, Cape Verde. That's about it from what I can see. Oh, and of course Botswana, which is where it was held. You know, and they're the few countries that France and the US still hold some sway in. And even to get it to host it there, the US had to promise and give Botswana a new military cargo plane, a Hercules C-130. Now, I hope you heard the air quotes around the word cargo, because the C-130 is also able to be refitted as a weapons platform when it becomes an AC-130. Some of you, well, hopefully all of you, we'll remember the US airstrike on a Medecin Sans Frontières hospital in Kunduz province in Afghanistan in 2015. Well, that was an AC-130. Now, when they changed from a cargo plan to a weapons platform, the same model Hercules that was just given to Botswana puts all its cannons on the starboard side, I think it is, and flies in a circle around the target, barraging it, not stopping firing, hitting its target from all sides, just like it did in Kunduz. But that's by the by. Anyhow, there's been very little in the US media about this US AFRICOM Defence Chiefs Conference. I guess it's too far away to hold people's interests back in the US of A, but there's a fair bit of it in the French and other European media, questioning the role of NATO in such a meeting. Ah, and separate to the AFRICOM conference, because I mentioned Libby before, I've got to mention this, the head of AFRICOM, a bloke by the name of Michael Langley, met with a bloke, Mohamed Memfi, the head of the Libyan Presidential Council, to discuss working closer together on counter-terrorism measures to ensure, you know, that the prick, Mammy, is able to continue bleeding the country of all its wealth on behalf of the US. Meanwhile, the EU is concerned with Libya's leaking borders. People are coming through from the Sahel, from sub-Saharan Africa, through Libya, and setting off on makeshift boats and dinghies and tyre tubes, believe it or not, whatever the hell they can find, and heading north across the Med. And many of them only get as far as Malta. But the Maltese Prime Minister, by the way, bloke chap by the name of Robert Abella, has claimed to be the role of Memphis' voice in the EU to advocate for stronger measures to combat migration from Libya. Because, as I say, they only get as far as Malta. So there's an obvious self-interest there. But then, as I'm Maltese, I've a bit more interest in the politics of Valletta that I think would bore non-Maltese listeners. Let me just say two words, though. Daphne Caruana, whose murder, because she was a whistleblower about Maltese government corruption, led to Abella's predecessors needing to resign before he was sacked and Abella's subsequent election. Well, I know Friday Rave often goes out on tangents, but this one seems to be nothing but tangents. Anyway, no apologies. While the US seeks to shore up its position in Africa through its Defence Department, its Defence Chiefs meeting, China has called a bigger conference. Every country, with the exception of Eswatini, will be in Beijing this week, including many heads of states. Every African country, with the exception of Eswatini, which is, of course, very close to the US, and is the only African country that has diplomatic ties with Taiwan, just for a start. Now, there are going to be some big announcements, I reckon, coming out of this conference this week. So I reckon I'll leave a state of Africa in general, and on the Sahel in particular, till after it. One part of Africa that I do want to just mention, though, and it does warrant attention immediately, is Sudan. And while I've spoke about the western edge of the Sahel, Sudan is in its eastern edge, immediately south of Egypt, and bordering the Red Sea, across from Jeddah and Mecca in Saudi Arabia, and just up from Yemen, of course. Now, I realise that a full report on what's going on in Sudan would require a whole Friday rave in itself, and I hope to undertake that task shortly. But for now, I want to just point out a few things, just to make your Friday night less pleasant than it quite possibly already is. Firstly, this war is often talked about, when it's talked about at all, as an internal problem created by feuding warlords. The usual colonialist explanation for any war that they aren't orchestrating. And you may be surprised to hear me say this, but the major powers are not directly involved, or at least they're involved primarily by their setting up the regional power dynamics that led to the war, and by their refusal to do anything about it. We don't know. We don't even have an idea of the death toll in the civil war between the Sudanese armed forces and the Rapid Support Force. And let's not kid that these are two extremely opposing viewpoints. The Rapid Support Force was started by the Sudanese armed forces, an auxiliary unit like an SAS to help them during the War of Independence struggles at South Sudan. Eventually managed to get their independence. And, you know, but they do have different basic ideologies. They represent different parts of the country and different ethnic... No, it's not really about ethnic groups. Different power centres. And I say we don't know how many people are killed even, but we do know that between 10 and 15,000 people were killed in Darfur in the course of one attack by the RSF alone. We do know that over 12 million people have been displaced, that 25 million are facing starvation, about 4 million children under 5 years of age are now, today, suffering from acute starvation. Cholera, dysentery, malaria are rife and can be directly attributed to the war, blocking medicines, destroying water supplies, and creating the high-density refugee populations that infectious diseases flourish in. We have a UNICEF report about the rape of children as young as 8 years old being used as a weapon of war. And that report also points out that babies that are a result of sexual violence in the war are often left abandoned at birth. Now, while there are some modern weapons being used, and I'll get to that, most of the violence is direct and as old as war itself. Yet, in some ways, Sudan is the very epitome of a modern war. It's waged against people. It's in a developing country with massive natural resources. It's been supplied and by outside actors. And really, no one seems to give a shit. As long as the oil keeps flowing and the gold keeps finding its way out of the ground and into the coffers of the people paying for it all. But of course, we're not to mention the gold or the oil, and we're not to mention those foreign powers. This war's being sold to people as a dispute between two illiterate warlords. That's what we want people to think. The silly bloody Africans are just killing each other. They've always done it. No. This is being orchestrated by outside. Anyway, as I said, I haven't got time to do it justice. But I do want to point out one other thing that isn't well known. That the United Arab Emirates are providing the Rapid Support Force with weapons, including very high-tech drones. And it's thought likely that Saudi Arabia's provided the Sudanese armed forces with similar. Now, neither Saudi Arabia nor the UAE manufacture drones. So where are they getting them from? Well, from many places, no doubt. But we do know that the Australian company, EOS, or Electric Optic Systems, have sent so many remote weapon systems to both countries that until the recent announcement of tank sales to Germany, they constituted Australia's largest ever arms deal up to that point in, 2016, I think it was. At the time, Australia caught a bit of flak because these weapons were being used in Yemen, it was believed. As I said, across the Red Sea from Sudan. It, you know, Yemen at the time was being called the world's largest humanitarian disaster, and while that war in Yemen continues, the appellation of the largest humanitarian disaster now goes to Sudan. At the time, EOS's chairperson, Fred Bart, could give no assurances that his company's weapons weren't being used in Yemen. Only that, and I quote, where is it? "We have no end-user EOS equipment that is likely to deploy it to Yemen. But the facts, such as we know them, are the UAE are providing the RSF with remote weapon systems, and we are providing the UAE with remote weapon systems." Put two and two together and get yourselves down to the EOS stall at the Weapons Fete next week, if indeed they can get in. On to more local matters. The Australian government has just announced that it can't wait for the new factory they paid $850 million for last month to be finished. So they're buying their George Strike missiles from Kongsberg's factories that they already have up and running in South Australia's Mawson Lakes. So tell me, here's a question for Elbow and Richard Miles and the rest of the fuckers. If Kongsberg already had a factory in Australia that only cost them $25 million to build all up, if they already had a factory in Mawson Lakes that is capable of producing the missiles we're told we need, even if we really don't, tell me again how the $850 million of public funds was primarily to make the same missiles for Australia that are already being made here and are already so proven that we can buy them from that factory and we don't need to build another one. There is no reason. The Newcastle factory next to the Lockheed Global Lockheed Global F-35 distribution warehouse is about producing missiles for the global F-35 fleet and nothing at all whatsoever to do with Australian defence. In closing next week, make it down to one of Land Force's protests that are taking place if you can. They're all over the city. Look them up on Facebook, Disrupt Land Forces, or on Insta. But if you're in the Castlemaine area, you should check out what's going on at the Bacon Factory. Just in closing, where the workers there have finally had enough of an incompetent management dictating their work conditions on behalf of some toffee British absentee owner. I know some of the workers there listen to a Friday rave every week. So all power to your arms, comrades. Let's show the fuckers that in spite of Albo's best efforts, working class trade unionism still has the power to bring the lords to their knees. That's all I've got time for this week. I'm recording this on the early hours of Thursday morning from Canberra. So, you know, if something's happened in the last 24 hours, that's why I haven't mentioned it. I'll talk to you more next week where I'll be pre-recording with on Monday, actually, and with Professor Clinton Fernandez, a good friend of the show. Anyhow, as I say, that's all I've got time for.